Let me do the intro. Ready?
Sure.
You're just...
Are we early?
That's okay. We can be early.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm the master of this ship.
I guess so. So excited.
There's no grown-ups here. Hello and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is Donna Cooper, comedic actress, stand-up comedian. You may have seen her on shows like Curb Your Enthusiasm, Everybody Loves Raymond, Joey, The Comeback, Boston Legal, yada, 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 you know, bunch of stuff. We're going to hear about all that in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and acsdigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Donna Cooper. Hello, Goober.
Hey, how's it going?
I got to call you Goober.
I love it. I love it.
Now, we're bugging out here, the two of us, because we met recently, like a year ago, kind of randomly, at a dim sum restaurant in Chinatown.
Correct.
With some Jewish guy who was having a birthday lunch.
Exactly. Some random Jewish guy.
We don't even know his name.
Thank you.
Cliff Dasner.
There you go.
You went to school with him.
Yes, I did.
I went to camp with him, you know.
Apparently you
before
did.
Before then.
Right before he got to the school where I went.
I hadn't seen him in almost that entire time since 19... I hadn't seen him since... The story with him was that I made friends with him at camp. I think I told you.
You said you made friends at camp, but then...
We made friends with him at camp, and then I went back the next summer.
Right.
Knowing that I would see him. And he had gotten there before I did, and he brought, like, some drugs and alcohol, and he got caught, and he got kicked out. And so...
When you showed up at the camp...
He was gone.
No Cliff.
Yeah, no Cliff. And it was the 70s, you know, and, and I didn't... I mean, I didn't know how to get in touch with him. That was years ago, right? We had Facebook.
Right. What is that?
And I got to Los Angeles, and one day last year, I was like, whatever happened to that goddamn guy? And I checked him out, and he lives, you know, like 10 miles from my house. So I called him up.
I was like, can't believe this story.
I called him up and said, okay, let's you know, hey. And he, so we're back on track, and then I walk in there, and there's you. But the time before that, that I saw you, the last time I saw you before Dim Sum with Cliff.
Right.
You was in New York City in the late 80s, and you were going overseas to, like, Iraq to tell jokes to the troops during the first Gulf War. What happened? What the hell? How was that? That
was like
crazy.
I would like to pick up that thread since that is the last time
I saw
you.
That's the last thing I know about you. You're like, I'm taking off.
I ended up staying almost a year.
In Iraq or some other place?
Yeah.
Wow.
But before that, the initial flight over, I'm all excited. I land. I'm looking for the person holding up my name in the little placard like they have at JFK.
Yeah.
And there is no person holding up my name. But I know I'm supposed to be there, and I'm cool, cocky coop, and I'm just strutting around the airport going, oh, this is a great gig. But then I remember, oh, I'm actually in a country that doesn't particularly embrace women. Especially, I was wearing a little miniskirt, little jacket, you know, not following any rules.
And we had just declared war in their country, so there's that, too.
Okay, yeah. Time is passing. About a half hour passes, almost 40 minutes, and I'm getting nervous. So I thought, oh, I'll try to find a place where they can announce my name to call. I dig my way through a whole bunch of men, you know, in white dresses, which
scares me.
It's
like a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Give the woman my little chit of paper, hoping she helps me, and nothing. Get ignored. Now an hour has passed, and I start to get that little, what they call that, raw donut in your stomach where, like, something isn't right, and, oh, yeah, war, and, oh, maybe I need to, after an hour and a half, I find a phone, and I was like, my brother had given me an Amex card, and he's like, if you get in trouble, just come on back. So I'm thinking, thanks, big bro, you know.
Yeah.
as I'm picking up the phone, I hear my name, Donna Cooper, Donna Cooper. I'm like, oh, great, this is perfect. So I see the guy.
Please report to the holding cell.
Okay,
for
bingo.
Torture. Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, how's it going? I go rushing up to him because I'm a very affectionate person. I go towards him. This guy starts scolding me, using every word that he could. And he's yelling at me, sit down, you're stupid. Where have you been? You're a stupid woman. And I'm thinking, well, that's a bit harsh. But okay. He gets my luggage. And at the time, I was a smoker. So I light up a cigarette because I need to just calm down. Smacks a cigarette out of my hand, and he's like, you're an idiot, you're stupid, you're a fool. I'm thinking, all right, if it's going to be like this, I'm going to have to leave We get in his car, and I'm thinking, I don't know where this guy's taking me. I don't even know who he is. He knows me. I don't know him.
He's just a guy yelling at Saturdays.
Exactly, exactly.
We so get that could be anybody.
we get to the cruise ship.
Like 85% of the people I know, yeah.
We get to the cruise ship. Some big, scary German guy opens the door and says, oh, I'll take her. And I was like, well, all right. I'm thinking, Donna, just bide your time. You can get home. You can get home. I walk onto the cruise ship. He puts me in the first room right off the gangplank. He's like, just stay there, rest, relax, and we'll get you later.
We'll bring you some bread and water in a little while.
Right,
yeah.
So I'm thinking, all right, you're here. So I go to sleep. I literally put on my little nightie and just go to sleep. Just banging on the door. I don't know how many hours later. It could be 20 hours, could be 5 hours. Bang on the door. I ignore it because I'm resting, and I'm Donna. I need my sleep. The bang, bang, bang.
I'm an actress.
Okay, exactly. Yeah. Then I hear, soldier, open this door! And I was like, well, seems like there's a problem. I open the door. Two guys holding guns, kneeling. Two guys right in the middle, holding guns right up the top, holding guns over the top. And a guy sitting in the middle, ready, like, guns drawn. And I'm standing there in the little nighty, literally, going, oh, but I'm the comedian who's supposed to entertain the troops. So there's like 10 seconds of complete silence where I never knew what it looked like to look down the barrel of a gun.
Literally look down the barrel of a gun.
Okay.
Now, the thing that's surprising me about this is that I've heard those cruise ships are very tight quarters, and you had six guys pointing guns at you. You must have had a great room.
No, they were actually outside.
Oh, they're
still
outside.
In the hall.
Okay. Right. So the halls are nice and big, but the rooms are teeny.
But it turns out the room I was in was the room where the bad soldiers go when they'd been too drunk the night before. That wasn't my real room. I was just in a little holding cell.
That was a holding cell.
The German guy said, you know, I'm so sorry this happened to you. You know, after I cleaned myself up, he said, let me take you for some food.
I love that you switched into your nightgown.
I know, but I like being comfortable. I went to the back deck, basically, and they're a cranking black box. So I hear, everybody, everybody, and then 1,000 men, all different shapes, sizes, and colors. And the drinks were a quarter. So, yeah,
that was the beginning.
Yeah, I stayed a year.
That was the beginning. Did you tell any jokes?
Oh, yes, I did.
Was that fun? What was that like? You're out there telling jokes for servicemen? Is that basically
it? It was all servicemen, all branches.
Wow.
It was as traumatizing as it was.
Yeah.
It was really funny because that's really all you have, that gallows humor.
Yeah.
And that sense of, okay, you have your gas mask sitting there just in case you need it. But
while you're on stage.
Well, you have to have one next to you, yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Okay.
So you...
No, but you're saying like, oh yeah, like writing it off. But no, to me, like people in the audience, you're doing comedy and you have a gas mask. You're telling jokes, you have a gas mask right there in case you need it.
Correct.
But see, you're just used to it now. That doesn't... You want to write it off and move on. But okay.
You're right.
I just wanted to pause. I wanted to make sure people got that. Yeah, okay.
Right. But yes, that was... In retrospect, I think, oh, it was a blast. We had a great time. But there was a sense of every time I stepped out on the stage, I knew my job was important just for even 30 seconds. Sometimes I did a half hour, sometimes I did an hour, depending on, honestly, what was going on around us, how long the guys could hang out. It was...
That's a lot of time.
It is.
But they're a great audience, right?
I mean, they're fantastic.
Because they have nothing else. I mean, people are shooting at them constantly and, you know, yelling at them. And you're the best thing that has happened for weeks.
And I was all dressed up. My hair would be done. I would do my makeup, wear fun little outfits. You know what I mean?
Key on little.
Exactly. Little outfit.
Yeah, little. The smaller, the better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they told me just to be really dirty. And I went, oh, how fun. That's great. Okay. So they liked some of the... They loved everything. Clean stuff, dirty stuff, even just picking on them, talking to the guys in the audience. It was...
Yeah.
I did take... Thank you for making me pause, because I do... Not, I take it for granted, but because it's in the past and I was there for so long, it just kind of was like David Gurr. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, this is what you do, and you make sure you have your gas mask, and da-da-da, and you, the stories the guys told, meeting with them and seeing the guys every 3 days, as it was different 1,000 men on the ship.
So this was like a pleasure cruise ship for them. I mean, it's not like you traveled around. You stayed on the ship.
Correct.
And then they would have
they
guys come
on.
R&R, they would come in and out. And so this was like their weekend.
Exactly.
To come on the ship and, you know, hang out and get wasted and and laugh at your jokes.
And we did get wasted.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
It was quite
for a year. No, this is a kind of tangential thing. I don't know. But
I'm listening.
The time I went to Jamaica, The first time I went to Jamaica.
Yes.
I didn't stay in one of those kind of all-inclusive resorts, you know what I mean? We got to the airport. We walked outside the airport. We found a guy with a car and said, hey, we need a place. Take us someplace. And so that's how we got there.
Perfect.
But hanging out there then, you know, we were like asking people who they were voting for. Mm. And we were just not like the typical idiot tourist people. Mm. And I got this sense that the Jamaicans, like the young men especially, were kind of in a revolt. And that they knew that their job was to be in constant party mode because you would just, like, the tourists come there to party. Wow. And so they live this lifestyle that they are just constantly in party mode. But, you know, like, it takes its toll on them. And so there was, like, I'm not even sure if I really understood this properly, but there was, like, this angry kind of bitterness about providing that. And, yeah, it was like, okay, you're going to come down here. We're going to really fuck you up. You know, that's like the only weapon we have is to get you so fucking high that it might actually harm you over a long term. I don't know, but anyway, you just reminded me. So that was you.
No, that's yes.
That was you.
Thank you for that.
That's where I'm headed with
that. There.
That's
what I heard. That little barb I didn't see coming.
No. But I think that must be in a way exhausting to be. You basically had to party for a year, and they just kept shipping in fresh people who wanted to hang out with you.
Right.
That, I mean, I'm sure that was fun, but oh my God.
It was
what
exhausting.
What a hangover.
Tell me about it.
At the end of the year.
Tell me about it. Actually, when I got back to New York, I went and worked in a brokerage firm after that.
The most sobering place you could possibly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It was, I was so, not even, I don't know if burnt out was the word. The stories that every 3 days, another 1,000 men, the rich guys, the poor guys, the people from there were so many different people to talk to. And to, when I say to talk to, they kept coming up to me and wanting just a little connection of home. And that part does really make me sad. It's like as I stutter right now because I think about how the look on their faces, it's like they just wanted some answers and they were being led.
Yeah.
So,
no, I can tell it's still emotional for you. Yeah.
Without getting to going down the political vein, the idea that these guys, they go over there, whether it be because they have nothing else to do, meaning they don't see any future for themselves, or it's what their family has always done, or they think it's their duty and they want to protect America. But you look at their young faces and they are. They are prepared to do whatever you ask them to do. They're ready to be led. They're ready to be led. And I genuinely felt like it was my responsibility to have a constructive, respectful conversation with them and tell them that I appreciated them and that I loved them.
Yeah.
Because how could you not love someone who was doing something for you when you didn't even ask?
Well, I was going to say thanks for doing that, right? I mean, it's a real service because I totally get that. They just want a taste of home.
Exactly.
It's so foreign. It's so, like, the whole environment is so different than what they're used to.
Yeah.
And whether you agree with the war or not, or the politics or the people that push the buttons,
right.
That's not what these guys, that's not them.
They could care less.
Yeah.
They're
not there for that.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Wow.
What I remember during that time, when that first Gulf War started, I was traveling a lot for business.
Right.
And I wound up being in the airport, like in Cincinnati or Kansas City or Denver. And I saw, you know, a number of times, you know, families that were bringing their sons or daughters, you know, to the airport to go to service.
Right.
And more than once, you know, like, you look over and there's the window that looks out onto the tarmac and the airplanes. And you see a young guy standing there in his military uniform, and then his dad, standing next to him, and they're not talking. They're both looking out over the planes.
Right.
And, like you said, maybe the dad has been there in this exact place with his dad. Maybe that kid is coming back. Maybe he's not. You know, but they're just kind of standing there side by side. And, yeah, it was really touching.
I appreciate that I've had this window to look into. I mean, I was party girl. Oh yeah, go Persian Gulf. This will be great. Drinks for a quarter, some are a nickel. But
that's what I was just like. This girl, but you're like, yeah, I'm going to the Persian Gulf to tell some jokes. Yes, I'm going to be on a cruise ship. I was like, are you insane?
I was so cavalier about it. But I think, wow, what a privilege, what a privilege to do, feel like my service, to do something for those guys and to really get a window and to see what goes on when you are in another country and just a little bit of what's going through your mind and how you feel over there. And yeah, I traveled around Europe and I was like, oh, I've been overseas, but there's nothing like being in Bahrain, standing on the sand, and you see smokestacks burning in the distance. It adds to life and shapes life, and I'm so glad I went through it.
Yeah, no, it sounds really super awesome.
It's so
awesome.
Good to be here to talk to you about it. I'm sorry, I'm still kind of freaking out about seeing you.
No, I really, we just haven't seen each other in 30 years. I mean, really, right? Something like 20,
I don't use
25.
Numbers, but yeah, I'll go with that.
Anyway.
long time.
Long time. So what do you do? You're writing. You're doing a bunch of writing. You said you're working on a screenplay.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about whatever you want to tell us.
Okay. I have, I'll say, made the transition. I love television. I love film. I've been doing a bunch of commercials. But I've always been writing, not just from stand-up, but I've had these little self-help books that I've typed out and printed out and a little manual to help this. And
you've written some self-help books?
Yes. Just my own.
I'm laughing already.
You couldn't like go to the shop and be like, where's the Donna Cooper self-help book? I've got it like under my bed. It's got dust on it, but you know.
Go to Bahrain. Yeah. Stand in the sand. Watch things burning. Yeah.
But honestly, I've always been writing and this idea knocked me upside the head and all of a sudden I realized I'm ready to write my screenplays.
Uh-huh.
And I have been, well, actually, I've finished this one. I still have to go back and rewrite and retweak whatever.
Always.
But I am so excited about it because it's brilliant.
Yes.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't say it's brilliant. I should let others say that. But I'm excited about
it. You're super excited about it.
I think you have to be excited about your own work, especially out here.
That's all you got.
Actually, it's about a cop. I can't decide if he's retired yet, but I have him. He's on disability leave right now. And he's married to an aspiring actress, and she's determined and hell-bent to be famous. But she's suspected of murder. Twists and turns. It's a great mystery. The end, pow, is going to hit you right between the eyes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
All right.
I'm really excited.
I'm excited that you're excited.
Actually, I would actually like your opinion. At some point, would you?
Oh, little old me, I don't know anything about no writing and stuff.
I think you just pulled my little old leg, buddy.
No, I'd love to read it.
I think.
I read.
I know you did. That's why all of a sudden I looked and went, that's right, he's an intellect.
I think that's what we bonded on when we first met, that I read.
Right.
And you said you read too, right?
That's how we met.
That's how we read. Yeah.
I can't wait for you to read it, Denzel. I can't.
All right. I will let you know. Yeah. No, I would love to see it.
It's the kind of thing where I'm still crackling about it because the feeling I got when I first moved out here and I was like, I'm going to be an actress. And I was still doing stand-up, but I knew it was time to go back to my original love of acting. And I've got that same feeling. It's like, okay, I've always written. I've always taken English classes. And that's writing is something I've always done. I never really thought a lot about it because it's just something I've done and been pretty good at it.
Yeah.
But now I'm like that I have this idea and it's on paper and ready to roll.
Yes. Well, that's why we're creative people. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta love what you're doing.
That's true.
That's all you have in our business. I mean, I hope lawyers and accountants, and I want everyone to enjoy what they're doing, right?
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Everybody does all the time.
But do you really have, I mean, that's a good point, because I was talking to my younger brother, well, I was talking to my mom, who was telling me that my younger brother isn't really excited about his job anymore, and he just got this big promotion and moved to another company, and he's thinking about maybe going back to the other job. And my husband was like, oh, you know, everybody wants to be happy. He's obviously a non-creative type. He's like, everybody wants to be happy, and it's your job. You just do it and show up. And I looked at him, and I was like, honey, do you really feel that way? I said, because to me, that's why I became an actor. That's why I started doing stand-up, because I loved being on stage. I loved making people laugh. Then it was like, okay, I've always had that love of acting, becoming a different character, and I love that, and I love the audition process. So I segued into that. So I have always loved what I've done, so I genuinely cannot fathom doing something that you don't love. But maybe because you have been in that other sector of life, do
me?
People? Yes, do people have jobs that they don't like? I mean,
yeah,
when
of
you
course.
Were at the ad agencies, like,
yeah, of course they do.
But they just keep showing up every day.
Well, you know, whose line is it about most men live lives of quiet desperation? Mm. Is it like Longfellow or Whitman or somebody like that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, yes.
It's one of those guys.
To me, I thought quiet desperation was like waiting for your next audition. Obviously, I wasn't getting the real
gravity. I'm sitting at the phone, looking at the, staring. It's like a watch pot never boils. Mm-hmm. When you stare at the phone, it's not going to ring. No, obviously there are people out there that do not love what they do every day. And, you know, I mean, what does your husband do?
He was in law enforcement. He actually was a federal U.S. Marshal.
Okay.
He used to chase bad guys around the world. Yeah. I mean, he's retired now, and he loved his job.
Yeah. So, you know, not everybody cares about that as their number one priority. You know, I mean, people say, okay, I have a job. I go to work every day. I'm there. I do my thing. It's not horrible. I like the people. They're okay. Mm. You know, it's work, and it feeds my family, and we do all this other stuff, and that's what really gives my life the meaning is, you know, other stuff.
Right.
You know, sometimes it's creative things that people do that they don't try to make a living out of, right? They write in their spare time and they work as an insurance agent. Who's the mystery writer? Raymond Chandler.
Oh.
You know, he was an insurance salesman.
Right, right.
You know, until he started writing, and then his books finally caught on. But he was an insurance salesman. And yeah, so people, not everybody needs to love their job. Not everybody cares and wants that. It also is risky.
It's funny, I guess growing up in Quaker schools where they nurtured you to do whatever you wanted to do. I know he's waving his hand saying, oh, pshaw.
That's not normal.
Oh, pish posh. And that's how I grew up, nurturing what you loved. And if being creative is what you love to do, then great. Be creative, and somehow, some way, the universe will reach out its arms to you and give you a living. And I mean, I've had to slug it out. It's not like I was, you know, sitting in my living room.
Those arms that were reaching out to me had boxing gloves on.
There you go.
Boom.
There you go. I still have some of the scars, but that's so ingrained in how I think. I forget that some people go, okay, I need to just make a buck. I mean, I remember being in the city, and if I wasn't making enough money creatively, I would do a temp job. I would go for a day. And if the air didn't feel right and the people weren't nice to me, then I was like, I'm sorry, I can't come back here because it was a hostile environment, and I left.
So, no, not you. Me. I'm feeling hostile about you. I hate you. It's a hostile environment. You suck, and I hate you. Yeah.
There you go. That was my whole temp career in the city.
At the same time, I think there's a danger if people just believe that, you know, this is what I love to do, and I should be able to do this, and the world should just support me because this is what I love, and the idea that it somehow is an injustice for you to have to work and do things that you don't really give a shit about, that's dumb.
Because
everybody's
got to
do stuff. Everybody's got to do stuff that we don't like to do.
I mean, completely.
You just do it. I mean, if you're a parent, a lot of stuff you don't want to, you just do the stuff because that's your fucking job.
I'm glad I'm not a parent. I mean, I like kids. I'm like, I like kids. Don't send me hate mail. But
And I like them, but they're brutal.
I like it that they're somebody else's. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's a major job bringing up children, and I think you have to really be invested in it, or you could just literally sit them in a garbage can and be like, I don't want to deal with you anymore.
But anyway. Well, some people do.
Yes,
that.
I've seen it and I've heard it.
Yeah.
But
I have a theory about kids. You know,
good.
I believe that God invented children.
For what purpose?
To literally show you how fucked up you are. Like, because when you have a kid...
I don't need a kid to show me that.
Well,
I think I've got a hold on that already.
Well, there you go. That's why you don't need to have children.
Right.
But for most people, they can kind of like just happily goober along in life. But when you have kids, it's a mirror and it shows you. It shows you, you know, like when your spouse asks you that question that seems rhetorical, like, what is your fucking problem?
Yeah.
And you're like, let me... No, that's a real question. That's an actual real question that you should think about. And when you have kids, you get a lot of information. So I think that children and the whole thing about procreation was invented as a way to help us evolve.
Okay.
And that God had to make sex feel so good
so that,
that we would still do it.
Right.
Because if you knew you were going to have a kid and it didn't feel as good as it had, it does having sex, you were just not, you were like, sex, I don't really care, you know? Parallel parking, sex, they're kind of the same. No one would ever have children.
My man, God had to make parallel parking.
God had to make sex feel so good so that we continue to have kids to help us evolve, or else, we would never do it.
All right, Mr. Wise Old Man, I'd like to swing back to something you said earlier. I completely agree with you on all counts.
So far, I like what you have to say.
I figured as much. The point about people doing things that, you know, like, oh, I'm a creative type and the world owes me a living. I cannot tell you how many nights I've been up all night long cursing myself and my parents and my Quaker school and my upbringing because...
For telling you you should be an actress.
For telling me that I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, fuck.
For telling me that the world is my oyster. For saying, Donna, go for it.
Go for your dreams.
Exactly.
Yes.
The world is yours. You
believe
work hard.
You.
You try hard, girl. You can do anything you want. I have had many an angry day and night because that really is a crock. It really is.
No, let's just clear this. Let's just settle this once and for all because I believe that you're exactly right. You can do anything you want. You know, believe in yourself is bullshit. I'm not saying that the opposite is 100% true either. I'm just saying not all that stuff. You know, you can try and that's all you got.
And thank you.
You can try.
Thank you.
And if you fail miserably, some people get to the end of their lives and they've failed miserably constantly.
Okay.
And they say, you know what? I did what I believed in and I gave it my best shot and I had a great time along the way and fuck me.
Okay.
But other people get bitter about the fact that they try at whatever they want and don't get there. And that's just not a good way to live.
There's this outside, I hate using ubiquitous words like, oh, the media and society, but I'll use them now. They make you feel as if you're not trying hard enough, you're not trying hard enough if you're not succeeding. And that is not always true.
That's not true.
That is not... I know my husband gets sick of me pontificating, so thank you for inviting me on the show.
No, I'm not sick of you yet. I got another, like...
I've got, what, 5 minutes?
16 years of, you know, listening to you pontificate.
And honestly, that idea that if you keep trying and keep trying and keep trying, that things will just magically open up for you. I have seen people try... I'll use acting as an example because that's one of the things I've tried.
That's what we're here. Yeah.
Try. You can go to these auditions. You can be the best possible person you can be. If they don't like the looks of you, if they don't feel there's someone they want to work with, you're not going to get the part. I don't care how brilliant you are. Or if you do get the part and they're like, oh, well, someone's niece or nephew, I really want them to have the part, they're going to get it. Or I'd rather put my nephew or cousin in the show, they're going to get it, which is completely understandable. I
totally
so get
fine.
Nepotism. It's
yeah.
like,
yeah.
you know, if I had a bunch of kids, I'm sure I'd drag them kicking and screaming into the business to get paid a lot of money. Why not?
Yeah.
But it does break my heart that so many people think that they've failed because, well, I've tried really hard and I just maybe wasn't trying hard enough. It's like sometimes people just aren't giving you, you need a hand up sometimes. And I'm not talking like welfare. Sometimes you need a break. You need someone to say, hey, I think you're on the right track. Let me nurture you. Let me help you through this next level. It's like,
yeah, sometimes, yes, that is also helpful, but it's also true that we fail.
Touché.
You know?
Touché.
It's true. That's the part that irritates me is that there's this Pollyanna around, you know, believe in yourself, go for your dreams, you know, yes, it's going to happen. And I think you could do all that stuff and know that it may never happen. That is much better, to know that it might never happen and that people do fail.
See,
people come to LA all the time
yeah.
and they don't achieve their dreams.
Right.
And it could be any number of reasons. They're not talented. They don't have the right training.
Mm-hmm.
They're talented and trained, but their look is not useful. They're assholes. Any other, you know, whatever.
Or combination thereof.
All kinds of reasons why you're not going to make it here.
But see, let me throw this at you. This is
That's the norm. That's the norm that you're not going to make it. So you can come and do the thing. I mean, I'm here hoping that, you know, it's going to work for me. But I know it's probably not.
Now this is where I'm sure people think that I'm contradicting myself, but I think that there's a difference between being objective and seeing the truth, and then having your own mantra that you want to go by.
Sure.
I think I would not have booked any of those jobs I booked. I don't think I would have worked as much as I've worked if I had come to Hollywood and said, I'm going to give it a try. I might fail. Because if I had left that little crack of an open door, my foot would have gotten caught in that little crack and I would have just been flailing around in it. I needed to have that Pollyanna look. Not the Pollyanna look, because that's denial. Not a very attractive
denial.
Look. But right, I had to be in a bit of denial, I think, to keep moving me forward.
Yeah.
And speaking things that did happen for me. I said from day one, I'm a working actor.
Yeah.
I'm a working actor. I didn't go around harassing people like some crazy homeless person. You're tagging them. I'm a working actor. Yeah, yeah, girl, here's a dollar, go away. But it was something people asked me what I did. I said I was an actor. I didn't say, well, I work at Pottery Barn. I work at a store. Oh, I don't want to give them any publicity. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kept it.
Yeah.
I owned that dream 100%.
Yeah.
It's only right now that I can go, well, I've got a nice pension and I've done a bunch of commercials, and I've aged out of some of the work that I've done. They're like, oh, look at her. She's not 25. Bonne chance, mon ami. So,
you still look 25, though, honestly.
You're a sweetheart.
No.
See, there's no camera here.
But
there's,
see, you're supposed to tell me that I also...
That's well, right. See, you I know,
it. That's right.
I, know I don't look 25, so...
like, this guy is bullshitting me. What the hell is his angle?
If this
what
was,
is he up to?
If this was a Hollywood thing, I'd go, oh, yes, thank you, and so do you. But I know you from New York. You're my friend, so I ain't going to lie.
So you're not going to,
Because you know I don't look 25.
No, you look great, though.
I think we look great.
Yeah, I know
we look love great. How we look, but 25.
Okay, okay.
All right, right. But no, I think you need that. You need to
you
know,
need
like,
to
I am going
to
be...
As a young person.
Right.
Yeah, I think
I'm going to be X, Y, and Z. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, even as... I left, I guess it was 2007, 8, 9, around there somewhere. My mom got really sick, and I thought I was done with the business. It was like a year it took off. And swan song, I thought she was dying, and I went home, and I started giving stuff away and, you know, preparing the house. And then the old lady lived, and now she's back.
She's pissed that you gave all her shit away.
Oh, please. Please.
Where's my egg beater?
Exactly.
God damn you!
I'm like, you need to
you
call.
You thought I was going
to
die. You gave away my slippers.
You need to call the Vietnam Vets. You need to call the Lupus Foundation. You need to call all those people that come by and give those little plastic bags because I have given. Yeah, it was. But she's great now. She's fine.
No, this is like act one of a comedy. You know what I mean? Like, you start giving away the stuff, and then the person lives, and then you spend the rest of the movie trying to get back whatever.
So that's going to be the TV show you and I are going to write together?
Okay.
Okay, perfect. But yeah, coming back, I realize, oh, they think I'm old now. Like, but I don't think I look old. But then I started doing a bunch of commercials, and I was like, all right, I still get paid for that,
yeah,
so I'll take
yeah.
it.
So. You know, you gotta believe in that kind of thing.
Yes, you have to.
I'll tell you why this is kind of a thing for me. Because it's heartbreaking, actually, to watch people come in and have their bubbles burst. You know what I mean? And... if you're here in Los Angeles, you know people who wish it had worked for them, and it
Correct.
Just you know, and it just didn't for whatever reason, and you see that it's hard for them, you know, it breaks their heart, and that's hard for me, and I wish there was a way that didn't have to happen, I guess.
And I'm sitting here not saying I hear you, and I'm listening to you. But I'm not feeling the heartbreak, because when you are in your own little bubble of, I know I'm going to make it, you don't feel disappointed. That's why I feel you need to be in denial, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it's it. Yeah.
I don't feel bad when people are told no, because I've been told no a bunch of times.
Right.
And I'm not like, oh, good, you get told no, I get told no. No, it's that is the nature of the business.
Right.
So when you haven't booked a part, but you're getting auditions, when you are getting callbacks, or even if people want to bring you in to be seen, if you're lucky enough to have an agent or have people, whether it be commercially or theatrically, whatever it is, I still see that as work. I still see that as, to me, that's still my job. I say, oh, I'm going to work. And they're like, oh, you just have an audition. Don't say I just have an audition. That might be your interpretation. That is my work. Work is anytime someone who has the potential to hire me, I'm in front of them. If I only...
So you feel like you're working all the time. So this is what makes the difference. You say you're working all the time,
exactly.
And you're talking, you recognize that this is also a business.
Exactly.
It is your art and life and heart, and there's a business thing.
Yes.
And they go together here.
Yes.
Right? They don't have to go together. If you're in Cincinnati, they may not go
Correct.
Together. But here they do go together. And if the business doesn't work, the other part can keep working for you. That's the place.
Exactly.
Yeah, that works.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, why I do have to get out of L.A. sometimes, because it is so exhausting. It's so overwhelming to every time you step outside. And not just, oh, I have to look good. It's like, oh, big deal. You have to pull yourself together. But that is part of your job. That is part of your job.
To look good.
To look good. Seen. Yeah. Exactly. To be out there. It's.
I think especially for a woman. I mean, as a guy, you know, yes, and blah, blah. But, yeah, for women.
Because I love your look. I mean, and not just as a friend. But objectively, you have a great look. You have a great look.
So okay.
I know, without a doubt, you'll be working in whatever capacity you want to be working in. It's just more people need to see you and whatever is really pulling at you. Is it television? Is it film? Is like, what is really...
Okay, so as a professional, you're looking at me and saying, yeah, the look is working. So where do you think this look can be useful?
I see television, and yeah, I see mostly television, commercially too.
Okay. Comedy, yeah. Drama? Good guy, bad guy?
Comedy, good guy, but can't be bad guy. Mm-hmm. It would be... I could really see you as bad guy, but I think you'd get your foot in the door with comedy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you've got the comedy chops. You can do it.
Well, no, it's good, right, because it's always good to... I realize, in every other area of life, people say you have to know who you are, know yourself,
right.
Know what you have to bring to the table, and
right.
Bring it.
Right.
And here in L.A., like, yes, and... Other people look at me, they're going to make up a story immediately about who I am and what's going on.
True.
And it may have nothing to do with who I think I am.
Correct.
And they're going to be right because that's what they see. And if they say, we want this guy to play the Elephant Man or we want this guy to play a 12-year-old girl, and that's what they see when they look at me, then they are right. They're the people that make the decision. So it's interesting to me that I also need to be open to what anyone else thinks I am that I don't even relate to or understand, because that's their job as a casting or person or producer to say, oh, I could use that guy in this. Here's how he would be useful. And yeah,
yes.
And I might not know what that is. So
true, but it's a little cart before the horse ish.
Okay.
Because you've got to present yourself in a certain way that they're going to be open to it. And just my little quirkiness.
Yeah, set me straight.
I wasn't wearing glasses when I first came out here because I wear contact lenses, no big deal. And I'll give him props. A guy I was dating at the time said, you know what? You never wear your glasses out. I bet if you got a really cool pair of glasses, that would work for you. And I was like, blah, blah, blah. No, something said, let me just listen to him. He was a creative guy. He had a successful website at the time, and it's great. He was doing some work creatively and getting a lot of...
So he wasn't a total idiot, is what you're telling me.
Well, he was a total idiot, but he managed, business-wise, he was doing great. No, that's not fair. He was a great guy. And I took him up on this idea. I got the glasses, and boom. It's as if no one could handle me, because at the time, my eyes were so big and so expressive, and they just thought I was, whatever they thought, they thought.
Whatever.
Or they had enough people that looked that way, or they just didn't want me to look that way, or the way I sounded didn't match with what they thought I looked like. Whatever they thought.
Whatever. Yeah.
But as soon as I got the glasses, it literally, I say made them, it was like dominoes fell. I was getting called in for things that I didn't think, I was getting called in not just doctors and lawyers, but I was the sidekick lawyer person. I was the funny da-da-da. I was the newscaster. I was this, and yes, there's a certain category, doctors, lawyers, newscasters, people that are in that same, of that ilk.
Right.
But I had to present myself in a way. I still could play those parts before I got the glasses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Nobody cares if you're qualified in L.A. That's why I'm here.
Okay.
No, 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 no. Seriously. Look, my journey, you don't even know what the hell I've been doing.
No,
but I've been working
in
advertising, you know, since I met you.
Right.
Since I last saw you when you were going to Iraq. I was working in advertising. I was in New York City. I moved to San Francisco. I have been doing that for, you know, all this time.
Oh.
I got fired from my last job 20-something years ago. I've been freelancing and working on my own.
What'd you do?
Just in time. Oh, I totally deserved it. But it was the wrong place for me. It was not a good match. So it was obvious.
Okay.
But then I started to do some working in the theater in San Francisco, and it started to get out of control. And
out of control in a good way?
Yeah, in a good way. And I said, hey, maybe I can, you know, maybe there's something for me here. And I decided to try to audition for some stuff in San Francisco.
Great.
And I got two parts right away.
Nice.
Like something on the Discovery Channel, and then I got bumped up from an extra on an NBC show. And I was like, oh, now all of a sudden I'm union qualified.
Fabulous.
So, and I thought about it, and I said, well, look, I have, I'm, you know, 40-something years old. I have no training, really, in this thing.
Okay.
I have no real experience. I've just taught myself what I know. And I have no credits.
Mm.
You know, no training, no experience. Where could I possibly go? Los Angeles.
Okay, like, because, that, no, that's like a little dagger in my heart.
Because the person, being the best qualified actor,
yes,
does not get you the job.
Correct.
It just, that's not, I mean, if you suck, then that's obviously, but the in every other field, you know, the best qualified people have a good shot. But in,
yes,
in this, I'm like, you know, if I just, I'm kind of funny and people like the way I look, I can get a fucking job, whether I know anything or not.
Thank you for all the hard work I put into
my
career.
I'm just saying, this is why I thought I had a chance.
Well, you do.
Where can I go with no training and no experience and maybe get a job? L.A.,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I laughed. That was like, okay, I'm moving to L.A.
How long have you been out here now?
How long has it been? It's just about 5 years.
Oh, okay.
But I spent the first, like, few years having a really difficult marriage and getting divorced.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't know.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow.
The woman who was here right before you, my guest, was a divorce lawyer, actually.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was your divorce.
No, not my divorce lawyer.
Oh.
No. She's great. Okay. Link Schwartz. Anyway. Okay. Yeah, that's a whole story. So I'll tell you that last year, and up until recently, I've been pitching a reality TV show.
Oh.
Because this most recent divorce, which was a year and a half or 2 years ago,
yes,
was my third divorce. The thing I'm really proud of in this, two things. First of all, none of these were my choice.
None of these are your choice?
No.
Okay.
I don't give up on love. I'm way too codependent.
Aww.
But it's always my wife that...
You sound like my husband. Anyway,
go ahead. Like, I think I'm going to marry this guy. And then shortly thereafter, they're like, what the hell am I doing married to this guy? So all three... It's been my wife's choice all three times. So I'm a little bit... You know, it's good. But also, in none of these three cases did we go to court, hire lawyers, or fight about it.
Oh, fantastic.
In all three cases, I bought this book called How to Do Your Own Divorce in the State of California.
Okay.
And I did it myself. I mean, it's kind of like doing your taxes, except that you also have to work it out with this person who now wants to rip your face off and flush you down the toilet. But aside from that, I mean, it's not easy. But honestly, going to court and you know, like,
yeah,
doing
that's
expensive, time-consuming,
yes,
and more difficult, I think, than doing it ourselves. So that's how I met Link, is I had some questions and blah, blah, blah. So I've been pitching. So I want to do a DIY show, right? You got DIY home improvement.
Keep talking.
Cooking. It's a DIY divorce reality TV show. So, you
I
know,
think
I've
that would work.
Been designing it. I've been pitching it around. Nobody
Good.
Gives a crap because I'm nobody in the business. And, you know, when you don't have a track record or reputation on the show, it's kind of hard to get those things started.
Let's but get back on the positive.
I haven't given up. I'm
Good.
Not giving up.
Let's get back on the positive.
Yeah, no, it's
get
a
back in the bubble just for a little bit.
It's a sellable concept.
Just exactly.
No,
just
totally.
Whether you have a track record or not,
yeah,
it's a great idea.
Yeah.
And people want to make money. That's the equalizer out here. Everybody wants to make money.
And, I mean, I honestly thought about it for months before I said, yes, I'm going to develop this.
Okay.
And I said, if there is some other person in America that has done their own divorce three fucking times,
mm-hmm,
and I have a training as a life coach because I did that along the way.
Right.
And, you know, so I know how to do that.
Good.
I have been, you know, interviewing people for advertising, you know, for 20-something years. I mean, I'm an interviewer. I know how to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm qualified. Like, there's nobody else qualified in the country. If this show is going to happen, like, I'm more qualified to host this show than anybody. Like, show me the other person that's done his own divorce three times. I want to meet that guy or woman. You know, they might be out there. But
I did not realize... I can't believe how much you are like my husband. He was married and divorced three times. I'm his fourth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And he's got married again?
It's funny. The guy...
did he have the prenuptial agreement? I mean... On the fourth marriage?
I had him sign one on me.
No. You're like, you're an idiot. I'm going to make you do this. You never, you've never done this before?
No, because I never wanted to be married. I didn't think marriage was for me.
To marry a guy that's been divorced 3 times, that's...
Well, I just figured marriage... To me, it was like, what? I didn't really get the point. I knew I wasn't really good into having children. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not like I want them to have, you know, a certain last name or have a little family unit.
Sure.
There's always men around. I mean, that sounds very... I know. That sounds so cavalier.
Flick your boa when you say that. There's always men around. Well, you know.
There is a reason why Sunset Boulevard is one of my favorite movies, darling.
You know this. Well, if you're in a cruise ship with 1,000 soldiers and it changes every 3 weeks. Yes. Yes. Okay,
thank you,
now
ladies and
I'm
gentlemen.
Understanding a lot more about you. Yeah, go ahead.
But I think, realistically speaking, why did I need to get married? I just didn't think I had to. And he proposed. And I thought,
bastard.
Yeah.
Fucker. Yeah.
And I didn't really have a good reason. I was totally in love with him. And I think I married him, I just knew it would be easier as far as like going home to visit my mom.
He'll stop bugging me if I marry him. Yeah. My mom will stop complaining. He'll stop whining. Okay, whatever.
Stop, that sounds so, like, it's a pity marriage.
Sounds true.
Okay, patting him on his little head, sure, I'll marry. No, I love him dearly. Yeah. And he's probably the only person I could be married to because he deals with my boa flicking and my nonsense. And every morning, I get out of bed, and he's like, he always gets up a lot early. He comes up, he's like, oh, good morning, honey. And I found out the other day, he goes, we're talking to a mutual friend. He goes, yeah, I got to say good morning to her, or she gets angry. I was like, what? You're only saying good morning and give me a kiss because you think I'll get angry if I don't? Then the wrath of God came down on him.
So wait, all the time you've been together, he's been setting his alarm for 20 minutes early so he can get up and be ready to say good morning because he's afraid of you?
Of course.
That sounds like a great relationship.
No. I had to say of course because that's funnier.
Yeah, of course it's funnier. Yeah.
Bless him. But I think you guys should meet.
Yeah. No, I met him. He seems like a nice guy.
When did you meet him?
At the lunch.
See, I don't even remember him being there.
He was there. Yeah. And he was giving me the eye like, okay, who the fuck is this guy? Because, you know, you and I saw each other and we were like, ah! We hugged, we laughed. I mean.
Because he knows I love you.
Obviously, there was something that had been something we had to do. And he just was like, he was giving me the eye. But if it was my wife, I would have done.
But he gets it because people are always coming out of the woodwork. I mean, I'm friends with exes on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm friends with, you know, I think. To be friends with exes, it's like not a big deal, but you
it's
know.
Better. It's good if you can do that. If you can do it's much better.
Like this.
Yeah. Plus, those are people that knew you back in the day.
You know what I mean? You see, it's funny. The one guy I'm not friends with is the guy who told me about the glasses, and I don't feel any need to look him up to be his friend. Mm-hmm. If we ran into each other, I'd be like, hey, how's it going? And, you know, yada, yada. But I don't... I wouldn't want to look him up and be like, let's hang out.
Yeah.
But if we ran into each other, I'd be like, you know, how's it going? I hope.
Sure.
I think you should be. To me, like, once I love you, I always love you.
Yeah.
I mean, once
yeah.
you're in my heart, whether it was a sexual relationship
sure.
or not,
sure.
there's a closeness there. I mean, unless you've done something awfully doggish, and I do have a list of those, male and female.
Even then, yeah, I know. But, it sounds like the guy with the glass, you never really connected with him because you're not looking him up because he's your ex. You just don't give a shit about him.
You know, I love how eloquently you put that.
Let's say his name so we know that.
You know, I was good.
So that he knows that.
And he's a big podcast guy, so I'm sure he's listening right now.
Yeah, he probably is listening right now.
Yeah.
What else was I going to say? Oh, the other thing, that last divorce, this third divorce, is the thing that got me to start doing some stand up.
Oh, good.
Because I just.
I mean, that sounds weird to say, oh, good, your divorce got you.
Because I just realized, like, oh, shit, this is ridiculous, first of all. And also, I had to start to process.
Mm.
I had to process what was happening for me, you know.
And now, what do you think it is? I mean, without getting too...
What? Why I've been divorced 3 times?
Or is it your picker? Like, are you picking the wrong people? Or are you just not seeing... Well, that's the same thing. If you're
Am I a dumbass? Or am I just totally
damaged?
Try not to go there.
Because we're all damaged.
Like, are you really fucked up or you're just dumb? Those are the choices you're
we're
giving me
fucked
so far.
Up. We all are.
But so this is why I'm on stage.
I'm listening.
Because really, the two choices are that. You're fucked up and or you're a dumbass. That's why you've been married and divorced 3 times. Right? Those are generally the choices. And so for me, I am a very philosophical person.
Yes, you
and
are.
And I say, okay, are those really the only two choices? Is there some other choice besides this? Because I'm kind of an optimistic philosophical person.
If you weren't optimistic, we wouldn't be friends.
Well, you know. But I say, okay, what's the other option?
Mm-hmm.
And this was the big moment for me. I was on stage in the beginning of this process one day, and I said something like, you know, the thing is, when you get divorced for the third time,
yes,
you realize you kind of lose the right to say, oh, that was a mistake. And you got to at least be open to the idea that maybe it wasn't a mistake. Maybe none of them were a mistake.
Keep talking.
I mean, obviously, in this area of my life, I have no idea what I'm doing. But whatever it is, I'm really good at it. The audience
I'm not
laughed.
Buying it.
The audience laughed.
I could see they would laugh.
I totally laughed.
Okay.
And I went home, and I just kept thinking about this and said, okay, what if you took this thing that everyone else looks at as a total disaster,
mm-hmm.
and the story that goes into the... We're trying to figure out what's the story that explains this total disaster.
Okay.
That this seemingly nice guy can't get his fucking life together. What if you... instead said, this is a success. This is a mark of success. And you then tried to build a story that showed that it was the success that made sense. What would that story be? That's the place for me. So my comedy and my story is all about this. And I'll tell you, here's the short answer for me. One night I was at home and I was feeling, after my second or third divorce, I forget which one, like mm-hmm. I was feeling really unsafe and insecure.
Okay.
Because it makes
yes.
sense, right?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I realized I never got married for safety and security. That's not why I got
why
married.
Why did you get married?
That was the question. Like, so what the fuck was I doing?
Right.
I got married for growth and adventure. And I realized now that I'm, you know, not 20 anymore, I'm older,
mm-hmm.
that in this area of life, love, marriage, but other things too, when I think I know how it's going to work out, or it all seems like it's mm-hmm. under control and makes all, that's not interesting to me. I blow that up. I find things that are curious,
mm-hmm.
There's a question.
Right.
Open space, white space.
Yeah, I like that.
Questions,
yeah.
Things that confuse me,
mm-hmm.
things that scare me, that mm-hmm. push my buttons and
right.
I don't know why.
Right.
Then I run right at them. And that's how I got married 3 times. I realize in retrospect, and the last one it was kind of conscious, but now it's fully conscious.
Okay.
That, I pick women that I don't know what's going to happen on the other side.
So it's like gambling.
But it's also like exciting because...
Well, gambling is exciting.
Where it's going to go is
open. What's going to happen? You don't know.
Yeah.
It's that big question mark, the big conundrum.
Yeah.
Okay, it could do this, it could do that.
Yeah. Now, there is a dark side to all this stuff.
Yes.
I'm going to let you know. But, I mean, like, that the positive side is that. And I do think that, you know, when people say you just keep falling in the same hole over and over again, what's wrong with you?
Right.
That, to me, is a gift. Because, subconsciously, I keep bringing myself back to the place where I'm stuck. Yes, I am damaged in some ways,
mm-hmm.
like everybody is.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just glossing over it, my subconscious keeps bringing me back to the place that needs the attention.
Okay, that story that I love, that little story of you're walking down the street, you see the hole, you fall in the hole. Or you walk down the street and you fall down.
Yeah.
You don't know where you are, it's darkness, what's going on.
Yeah.
Walk down the street, you fall in the hole. You know you're in a hole, but you can't get out. Walk down the street, you know it's a hole. You're in it, you're like, oh, why am I in this hole again? It's horrible. You walk down the street, you see a hole, you walk around it. Next time, you know that path has the hole, so you take that sidewalk.
Well, something really happens when
in
you
hole?
Get to the place where you look at the hole and you say, I don't need that.
I agree with you, because that's the walking around the hole.
That, you know, so I'm still working on that stuff. I mean, honestly.
You're still walking around the hole, so you're still going on that sidewalk.
But when people tell that story, they kind of gloss right over, like you realize there's a hole there, and you walk around it.
You only gloss over because you're trying to tell a story in, like, 3 seconds, not, like, a lifetime of telling a story, because that would take up too much time.
But getting that, like, oh, that's a hole. I'm not going to fall in at that. That's the moment. That's your big moment.
So you think that's the eureka moment. That's the moment of
that's the
real...
That's the moment, yes.
But see, to me, all the moments are like, oh, that. Well, the moment when you're in the hole and go, I know I'm in a hole now. Yeah. The moment of, I'm going to walk around it. It's a big one. The moment I go, I'm not going to walk down that sidewalk. Those are all eureka moments, I think.
I'm the guy that just keeps looking for new holes to fall into because I want those eureka moments.
But you can still have eureka moments on the other sidewalk. There's just no paint involved.
Well, this is a philosophical... No, this is a really interesting point, because can you learn the same things by not failing as you learn by failing?
That is a very good question. I think you can. I'm looking at, and obviously I'm speaking from my perspective, what I believe. The things I learned when I failed, I know them.
Yeah.
They're in my fiber. They're in my DNA. The things I have learned, and not that I'm so fully evolved, but learned a bunch of things, done a lot of work on myself. The things I've learned going down the other sidewalk, They just feel different. It feels different, but I still, look, the screenplay that I'm writing.
No, there are things to
I still get excited.
Yeah, yeah.
If I didn't, because I think we're basically very creative people, I still need something to get excited about. Different things excite me. Different challenges excite me.
Yep.
Especially when someone says, oh, you can't do this. Oh, you tell me I can't do that. Watch it. Okay, thank you.
Hello.
Exactly. Watch me, okay?
Right.
And you'll be sorry you ever said anything. Okay. But I love that. I love that feeling of, okay, the adrenaline rushing and proving. And so I do believe you can still learn. It's, I am so tired of being in those sweaty, dark nights of trashing and thrashing around. I know life can be too much fun. I can enjoy things a heck of a lot more. That's why I love certain movies. And I was watching Robin and Marion last night, the movie, and how they both committed suicide at the end. And I was just, I mean, literally the tears are coming. I'm streaming. I'm looking at my husband. I literally want to say to him, so we're going to do that, right? We're going to drink the hemlock. And he's like, all right. He looked at me and went, you just need to calm down, before I could even open my mouth, because he knew what was coming. Because I gravitate towards...
Let's be like them. Let's kill ourselves. I know. What are you doing this weekend? I got it. Oh, my God. I heard about this thing. My friend did it. It was amazing. Her sister, actually. What is it? Suicide.
Okay.
You're going to love it.
Stick with me now.
Hemlock.
Hear me out.
Hang on. Don't jump to a conclusion.
No, but I think you've got something as far as your stand-up is concerned. To me, stand-up, you need that angst. You need that rub.
Yeah.
You need the stay on that sidewalk. Because falling in the hole is funny. You need that.
Well, I mean, obviously there is something, you know, wrong with me. But, like, there's something wrong with everybody.
Right, right. So there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with you.
Well, you know what I mean.
You're
I'm
just human.
There's
right.
The human being.
What
so.
Human do you know is, like, all perfect and fabulous?
Nobody.
Okay.
And if they were, they wouldn't be laughing at the comedians.
Thank you and good night.
Yeah. Yeah, why are comedians so, I mean, what is that connection? Relationship, I mean, comedians and, you know, things that suck.
For me, it was a way to really not feel so alone. It was a way to say things out loud that you go, is this for real? And when you hear the laughter back, you not only know it's for real, but you know that it was okay that you said it out loud.
Yes.
And that you lived through it. Because some things, you're like, how did I live through that? Even if it's not physically traumatizing, but something that's mentally traumatizing can be even more scarring, because you need your brain to function. So that, to me, stand-up was such a great cloak of validation. I could feel happy. I could be in my angst and feel like I was part of. I didn't know that at the time. I do stand-up sparingly now. Not that I don't ever get on stage, but I still keep a notebook and a log of things great lines and things I want to write down. But I realize I've segued more into the writing, essay writing, things that funnier prose, things that I don't need to attack as much, because comedy is very violent. They're like, oh, you killed last night. You killed. I'm going to kill him. Kill. It is very violent. And when I'm on stage, I felt like I was attacking in some of my best sets. And you want to be attacking because you're like, I slayed them. But there's a lot of negativity in that.
Yeah.
But we just manage to, it comes out funny. It's funny. The negativity grates on all of us because we're all in this together, and you're like, I can't believe you're laughing because you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why usually profanity is funny, because it's a little uncomfortable. I mean, Speaking of profanity, my mom now, that's how I know that she's
speaking
feeling
of
better.
Profanity, my mom. No, yeah, way to go. Yeah,
because she started using profanity. We could never use profanity or even say pretend curse words growing up. Very strict. Very strict. And now she'll use profanity every now and then, and it's hilarious. I was talking to her on the phone the other day, and she hasn't been feeling good, and she's a little run down. And she said, I said, Tamar, are you doing okay? Have you had your lunch? She's like, I made my lunch, and I'd eat it now. If someone would get off the fucking phone. And we cracked up. I was like, okay, Ma, stop using profanity. She goes, all right. And but it's hilarious coming out of this, her. Like, 80-something-year-old mouth.
Where does she live?
She's still in New York.
In New York, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure that I knew where you were from exactly.
On Long Island.
Yeah.
I still go back to see her to make sure.
Oh, yeah, Long Island, right now. But I get what you're saying. It's funny. You said it's like a cloak of, you know, and you were saying...
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's the cloak of invisibility, mm-hmm. or the cloak of anonymity, mm-hmm. right? Harry Potter, the invisible. But you were saying it's the opposite. You reveal something, reveal the pain, and people respond, and you're not alone.
Right.
And totally what you said, like, wow, if I say it out loud, it changes it.
It does.
That's why I started saying, yeah, I got to get up on stage and say, you know, yeah, I'm just getting divorced again. Number three, you know, and people are like, what? You know.
Yeah.
Because guys get up there and they're like, oh, yeah, I just got divorced. But no, this is, you know, third one. And I also decided I have nothing bad to say on stage about my ex, any of them. Like, that's not the thing. You know, I'm not there.
I don't know if I believe you. I'm not saying trashing them, but are you saying, even if the bad thing is they chose to not love me anymore?
Well, no, I'm not trashing them. I mean,
okay.
And then the jokes aren't about them.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? I mean, the jokes are all about what the fuck is wrong with me. It's a totally legitimate question. Like, everybody's asking it. My mom is asking it. People, you know, people are asking my mom. I know they are. Right? My mom was upset that I'm getting divorced the third time, really? Not because I'm unhappy, because now she's going to have to explain it. And people are going to say, you know, people are going to look at her and they're going to be like, what's wrong with your son? But they're not going to want to say it out loud. But they're all, both of these women are going to know that that's the question. No, she's like, oh, Denzel, really?
Do what my husband's mother does. She doesn't acknowledge me at all. She just keeps calling me the second wife.
The second wife?
Yeah. The second wife's name, yeah.
Oh, the second wife's name. On purpose. And what are you okay with that?
No, it is so horrible. Is a whole other stand-up routine in and of itself.
So she just is in, she just is refusing. It's not even like she's senile. She's like skips the third wife and just like, fuck it, goes back to the second wife.
Right, and just because she liked the second wife.
Yeah, of course.
So that's who she...
Physically, are you anything like the second wife?
Not even a little bit.
No, that's even better.
Not even remotely.
That's even better.
Whole different hue.
That's even better.
Yeah. That's one way to do it.
Complete
denial. Complete denial. You get Christmas gifts with the name on it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm almost there because my mom knows that I got divorced.
Okay.
My sister knows that I got divorced.
Right.
But no one else in the family.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Knows. And it's now been like 2 years.
Denzel.
Over 2 years that we're separated. And it's a big Italian family, you know, with a bunch of people. And a couple of times, last summer, my ex, her son, and I, we went on a family vacation. We went to the East Coast. We stayed with her family. We stayed with my family. We visited. We didn't tell anyone that we were divorced for 2 years.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Because, look, if I tell my family that I am divorced again...
Yes.
First of all, they're gonna be sad. Because they care. Right?
I hear you, but...
Even though they love me, they're still going to be a little judgmental because you can't help it.
A little judgmental.
You can't help it. Even I'm judgmental and it's me. Maybe he's not the... And it's going to make people feel uncomfortable.
You mean Okay, so, it makes people feel, so what? It's just like me being out in California. Nobody wants me to be out in California. All my friends are back east. All my friends are back east. They're like, why do you go to California? It makes them uncomfortable. It makes them mad. It makes them upset when I leave. Yeah. And you know what? I pack my little things and I come back. I cry. Sometimes I get really upset. I love being on the East Coast.
Yeah.
But for right now, this is where my career is. So you just go, and that's too bad. They're upset. That makes them better people. They have to work through their stuff.
I don't want to have to deal with any of it. I don't want anyone to ask me any questions like, ooh, what happened? I mean, honestly, this is the third time. I'm not going to answer that question again. Plus, if I knew, I wouldn't be here.
That's what they say. Yeah. Ooh, what happened?
What happened?
It's always the, ooh, what happened?
Ooh, what happened? How the fuck would I know? I mean, obviously, why are you asking me? The least qualified person to answer that question.
Oh, man.
Least qualified.
Oh, Denzel.
So I don't
cannot
tell
wait to hear your stand-up. You don't tell them.
I don't tell them.
You know how that's impeding your growth, correct?
No, it's not impeding
anything.
Yes,
it is, because you're not being honest. Anything you're not honest about that you're keeping buried under a bushel, it gets moldy and gross, and it grows all kinds of fungus.
I'm on stage telling strangers that I've been divorced three times, but I don't want to tell my aunt because she's going to be upset. That's all. It's not moldy.
Okay. Well, the more you do stand up, the more it'll come out, and they'll catch wind of it.
A couple of summers ago, I was there. I was going to tell her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're very close, my mother's sister. But her only daughter was getting ready to go to college, like in 3 weeks in Florida. And they live in Philadelphia. And the parents were just all like, this is not the time to tell her that I got divorced. You know what I mean? Her kid's going. Now I'm going back there this weekend. Somebody's getting married. I'm not going to tell people at a wedding. How are you doing? Oh, yeah, nice to see you. Oh, by the way.
Okay, see, this is where.
What do you want me to do? Send the letter?
Because I'm taking the other side.
Mass email?
I find the drama wherever I can. You tell people on your schedule and let them deal with it. I'm sorry if it's out of order. I'm not saying. I'm insensitive. I try to find a good time, but just tell them.
They might find out someday.
They will deal with it when they... So she's going to college. Good. She knows that life is hard.
Okay.
Some people get married once, twice, three times, even four times. Randy's married four times. Hello. The guy that married us is my best friend's father. He was the mayor of the town. And he's like, this guy just keeps pitching, huh? He really is. Right, he's into love.
He's optimistic.
And he is. And look, and yay. And now he's happy.
And now he's happy. Well, you know,
you're shaking your head. You're like, are you sure he's happy? But he is.
Look, I have made a whole career of, and you know, again, this is in retrospect, I realize, of falling down. You know, I like to do things that I've never done before,
mm-hmm.
that I don't know if I could do. I'm happiest when I'm in over my head. Mm. You know what? I want to do work that scares the shit out of me.
I think that's great. I love that. I think it's great.
Yeah, I fuck up a lot. And
but
sometimes,
you're supposed to. Isn't that what life is?
I'm
you're
just
supposed
saying, whatever.
To.
Yeah, I'm never bored.
Okay.
I'm never bored. My learning curve is always super steep.
Mm.
And so what? I feel overwhelmed, intimidated, and in over my head, and unqualified. You know, but I hustle. I hustle, and I work really hard
Let
to
me
make
throw
up
something
for
at you, because that's a Denzel I love. But do you think you could be even more of that way if you had a, and I'm going to say stable love life, using it in quotes, because what is a stable of life? Because just speaking for myself, as insane as I know I have been in the past, I love that I feel like my trajectory can go even higher because I am not dealing with the insanity of the drama in relationships. I mean, Randy was like, Randy's a husband. He goes, it's easy. And I was like, what are you on about, buddy?
How would you know? You've already been married three times. How easy can it be?
And he said, that's why he knows. He goes, it is easy. He said, everyone was trying to make it difficult.
Yeah.
And the longer I'm with him and the more I'm alive, relationships are easy. Come on. I see you. I know I love you. How's it going? I haven't seen you in forever. We hug. We chat. Who's this? A couple of phone calls before I was leaving to go going to Mexico and to some of the islands. And I was like, oh, we're supposed to get together, and it never happened, but I knew I'd see you at some point.
Yeah.
Then I get this, oh, sure, I'll come to the show. Fabulous.
Yeah.
We see each other. Bam. It's easy.
Yeah.
It is easy.
Those are the people you should be hanging out with.
Touche.
That's it. It's not always, but that's how you judge.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
A couple of last things that I like to do with everybody. I like to anagram.
Oh.
Just to see what shows up. Donna Cooper, I anagrammed your name.
Yes.
Nothing interesting.
Thank you.
On the other hand,
keep talking.
I anagrammed comedic actress.
And what did you come up with?
Well, I got these two things.
Ladies and gentlemen, it says scarce, domestic, miscast, coerced.
Yeah, so the game is, when you anagram something, and you get these other words, do these other words add any flavor, or do we go somewhere? Does it take us someplace? And you're like, oh. Like, for example, comedic actress, scarce, domestic. I put those together, and I said, oh, yeah, here's a woman who's never home.
It's right on the money.
Right?
It's right on the money. I love a clean home, and if I have to do it myself, fine, then I will. But I prefer not to. And Randy does a beautiful job of keeping the home spotless. He's fabulous.
But is that you? You're never around. He's
correct.
Got, yeah, scares
correct.
Domestics. So
exactly.
They, yeah.
I actually said, what are we having for dinner tonight? And he said, don't worry about it, honey. I said, okay, I'll pick up some wine. That's exactly what I said.
There you go. There
wow.
you go.
That's...
But the second one is miscast and coerced.
Miscast, I think, is spot on, believe it or not. As much as I embrace my comedic chops, I am a heck of a dramatic actress.
You're really sad inside.
Yeah. Thank you. Like when I played
the clown.
It's true, the tears of a clown.
Yeah.
But it's true that I was on The Shield playing a hooker with HIV who got raped, and I loved that role.
Yeah.
It was so, everyone's like, well, Donna, that's so not you. Well, first of all, it's called acting.
Hey.
And
hello.
It, that sense of, yeah, I think I would take drama over comedy any day.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Love it. I mean,
yeah,
because to me, comedy is, I don't want to say easy, but comedy is like, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Comedy is just you and I sitting around chatting.
Okay, so that feels easier for you in a way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, coerced. What about that one?
I don't know. I mean, there was comedic actress, miscast, comma, coerced. I thought, who knows?
Someone is coerced. A coerced, to me, that's something that's
casting couch kind of things. Anyway, you know, not you in particular, but
that's
a comedic
actress.
That's
something in the future.
Oh, you're looking forward to some exactly. casting couch drama?
Yes, thank you. I'm getting my screenplay made. I don't care what I have to do.
Anybody can get sexually harassed when they're 30 or 22. I mean, if you get sexually harassed when you're 67, now you've done something.
Keep talking. That's
now,
what I'm going
that's
for.
That's what you're going for.
And I'll be wearing that red lipstick no matter what. I love that.
All right, two last questions.
I'm listening.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping ritual. What is it? Or bedtime ritual. What is it?
How do you know this? Well, it really does depend on the day, but usually I will take a shower before I go to bed or take a 2.5-hour Epsom salt bath. And I will meditate. The meditation is just basically lying flat, and I have things that I say, but I do have to. If I can't do a full 20-minute meditation, it'll just be a 2-minute one, but I have to do some kind of meditation.
Every night before you go to sleep.
And usually I have to take an allergy pill, or else I'll look like Quasimodo the next day.
That's as quirky as it gets? You have to take an Epsom salt bath and do some meditation?
Pretty okay. much.
All right.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. I mean, that I'm willing to tell on air.
Oh,
I have some things I like to keep private.
Okay. All right. Next question. As a child, you had an imaginary friend. Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend.
Oh.
Where are they now?
Actually, they're here with me. They moved to L.A.
Uh-huh. Tell me more.
Yes, they've moved to L.A., and they've grown up with me.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they like how we've turned out. We're still good friends.
What else can you tell me about your imaginary friend and his or her imaginary friend?
It's her friend.
So your imaginary friend is her?
Yes.
A female?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about her friend? Do we know anything about her?
I don't know a lot about her, actually. I know that she's there.
The friend's friend.
Yeah, the friend's friend. It's kind of like, it reminds me that I'm not just the center of attention. It's not just all about me, that she does have other friends. So it teaches me how to share and to not always be greedy for someone's attention. Keeps me in line with my life lessons.
Okay. All right, with your imaginary friend.
Exactly.
Did you really have an imaginary friend, or you're just playing along for fun?
A little both. I really did.
You did?
I never. Someone I always knew was with me. Uh-huh. Yeah. I never had any sisters. So it was, I had a sister that was my imaginary friend.
Oh, really?
And we kind of, it was like, well, if I had a big sister, then she would be, and I never really spoke to her because I knew she wasn't really there, but I never wanted to tell anyone about it because that would open her up to someone destroying her.
Yes,
so
right. Changes it.
Right.
So you had a kind of imaginary older sister, mm-hmm. that was there, mm-hmm. as a presence, as a comfort, as a guide? I mean, what kind
of
role?
Comfort.
Comfort.
Okay. You're going to make me get all teary-eyed now. Yeah, just as a comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you are getting a little
teary-eyed. I know. I'm all... See, that's what I love about comedy. It's like the laughter's there, but right underneath, you just peel away and ask me about my imaginary friend, and and the tears come down.
The tears are just coming.
Yeah,
we'll
don't
see.
Worry.
All right, we got to go.
Okay.
We're gonna keep doing this more, but we got to end the show because I don't know.
I can't believe you've been yakking for that long.
It's almost 9 hours now. I'd like to thank our very special guest, Donna Cooper, for coming in today. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv.
I think I will.
I also want to start selling rainbow unitards. Because there's that whole thing about the rainbow unicorn, and this is a rainbow unitard.
Okay, I would wear that with a black skirt, black hat.
It just sounds
funny.
A
black leather jacket.
Yeah, and reminds me of Richard Simmons, and so this makes me laugh.
I love him.
He's still around.
I know he is,
freaking.
But he's like sequestered, no one can reach him. He's like, but I'm fine. Go away, leave me alone.
Oh, Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. That was the guy that took our photo.
Right, your ex-wife, I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel, a guy I've never been married to. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I am your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week. And don't tell my Aunt Kathy that I'm divorced.
I am so putting it in my screenplay.
Oh,
I won't
God.
Tell her. I promise.
Bye.
Bye.